welcome to Cultural Fugazi, an optimistic take of the culture of the end times. I am one of your hosts, Justice, and I am joined today, as always, by my co-host, Chris.
Hello.
Today, we want to start with an apology for not being around for a little bit because we've been busy. Mostly, we had a lot going on this summer, right?
Yeah, it was a busy summer. It was a very busy summer.
Yeah, we could go into details, but we're not because It's the holiday season now.
Got other things on the agenda.
We were going to talk about summer blockbusters in the summer. We got drunk and watched Alien together.
We did!
But it's no longer Alien season.
No.
It's time to get in touch with your inner holiday spirit.
Exactly. We'll get back to Alien at some point because that also has to do with capitalism. But that's not the capitalism we're going to discuss today.
No. We're going to talk about the capitalism, less of the commercialism, but the capitalism of the holidays with Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And as we are wont to do, we did watch the Muppet version.
Yeah, a very specific take on A Christmas Carol. One of, in my opinion, the best takes.
Now, I don't know if you know this. I think we talked about this before. But the one year my partner and I watched as many different variations of A Christmas Carol as we could find in a year.
Yes.
And you don't start with the Muppets take on A Christmas Carol. You kind of climax with...
Yeah, that's the... your goal. That's your end point.
Yeah. You're dealing with a lot of great... there's a lot of good takes on A Christmas Carol. Hard to top.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not a fan of musical numbers,
mm-hmm.
Hard to top. But we'll get into it. As always, we do a thesis statement, and then we kind of move through it and move into our thoughts on kind of the politics of the piece, which with A Christmas Carol, there are a lot.
Yeah.
Who knew Industrial Revolution era London?
You know, that Charles Dickens, it's almost like he had opinions about poverty and wealth.
Who could say? So our thesis statement today, which we've been workshopping for all of 5 minutes on our third and fourth consecutive glasses of wine, who knows, is that there are many takes about how Christmas is the holiday spirit or whatever, but Charles Dickens really hammers home the fact that it is a holiday that is not about capitalism. Capitalism has taken it over with commercialism, but the spirit of the holiday has nothing to do with money and everything to do with growth and change. It's a time for self-reflection and developing inner peace surrounded by the people that you know and care about.
Well, and about embracing the idea of compassion and community.
Yeah. So as we get into it, a couple things to note from a programming perspective. We're already a little buzzed. so we'll do our best
to stay
on topic. And we're only doing one movie. So it's just A Muppet Christmas Carol. We might talk about some other holiday movies.
Yeah, I feel like I mentioned, Justice, you, another Christmas Carol that also happens to be under the Disney umbrella that I think is another remarkably effective take on the idea. And also, like, it works in part because of the totems that Disney has erected to capitalism in their own Disney mythos. Yeah. So that will probably come up. And there are some other Christmas movies that I think are in conversation with this that we will probably end up discussing.
Yeah. As we continue down the path, we'll figure out where we end up.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we are, as you've mentioned, maybe once or twice, we are a few beverages in. And I think that partially this is, hey, it's the holidays. We want to get back on the saddle. We would like to have those sleigh bells ring, ting, tingling. Allowing us to bring the people a bit of Christmas joy that might not be quite as tight in the way that you are used to us being, but will still, I'm sure, be just as incisive.
Yeah.
And interesting.
Absolutely. And also, please forgive us for not being around.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, the holidays are the time to ask for forgiveness and to ask for mortgage forgiveness. And if you are about to default on a loan. So With that,
our rent is very, very overdue, and yeah. we're asking you, please, please, audience, don't be a Scrooge.
Yeah, don't be a Scrooge. Forgive us. So, the Muppets' take on A Christmas Carol does a couple things different. One, there are Muppets. Who knew? Who could have thought? We'll talk a little bit about some of the specifics with set design. I'm super impressed with the set design of this film.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk a little bit about that whenever we get into some of the ghosts. I was thinking, as a fun thing that we could do, it just now occurred to me, mm-hmm. is that we could structure the podcast and the ghosts of podcast past, the ghosts of podcast presence,
oh my God,
and the ghosts of podcasts yet to be. But that would be like a whole thing. Maybe we'll do that at the end.
Okay.
We'll do that at the end. Okay. We'll do like a little bit of structure.
I do like that idea.
Self-reflection and some future state stuff. But for the Muppets' take on A Christmas Carol, one of the things the movie immediately leads off with is which Muppets are playing which Dickens characters in A Christmas Carol,
mm-hmm.
which immediately tells us that we have to suspend our disbelief with what we think of the Muppets and the Muppets in a movie, and also what we think of A Christmas Carol, whenever they say Fozzie Bear is going to play...
Fozziewig.
Yeah, Fozziewig.
Fezziwig.
Instead of Fezziwig.
Hey, good work, Muppets.
You know, you shoot for the low bar.
Yes.
And then whenever you hop over it gracefully like the Muppets do, it works. The thing that we were talking about while watching the movie was that this movie kind of works better when you have some understanding of the Muppets. I wouldn't say that A Muppet Christmas Carol should be your first piece of Muppets media,
mm-hmm.
but it does a really good job of introducing you to the Muppets as characters. It works better, like the Disney take on all this stuff, whenever they do, you know, whenever Scrooge McDuck is playing Scrooge.
Yeah. Same thing. It works better if you are familiar with those characters. Because you're like, yeah, Scrooge, of course.
Yeah, and the primary character of Ebenezer Scrooge is also played by Michael Caine, you know, star of theater and movie, and an absolute delight.
Well, and, you know, you have all the rest of the primary characters, save for Ebenezer's love interest, Belle. You've got, well, and his nephew, but aside from that, it's Muppets all the way down. So Scrooge is our one non-Muppet protagonist, our one non-Muppet character.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, very clearly very intentional. You know, the characters in A Christmas Carol that are not Scrooge are, it's not that they are tangential to Scrooge, but they are all living in a reality where the vast majority of them have already accepted the idea that compassion and goodwill towards their fellow people is important, but Scrooge is not. So here you already have a separation between Scrooge and the people that he's around that, you know, you're initially pointing out this person is different. This person is acting in this community in a different way than the rest of the Muppets are. All the Muppets are a community. Scrooge is separate from that community when we start out. And I think that's an intentional choice. And like you said, Michael Caine, if you're going to get someone to be that separate human, good choice.
Yeah, I definitely am familiar with this take on Twitter, which is that the 90s Muppet movies were work really well because Michael Caine treats the Muppets as people, and Tim Curry in The Muppet Treasure Island is just a Muppet.
Yeah.
Right? And boy, oh boy, this movie doesn't work if Michael Caine did not view the Muppets with gravitas.
Yes.
Right? So whenever we start the film, we are led to Rizzo the Rat and Gonzo is claiming that he is...
Gonzo, not Gonzo.
Yeah, Gonzo is not Gonzo. He is Charles Dickens.
Although Rizzo does point out, like, wait a second. No, you're not. Yeah. You're Gonzo.
Gonzo. Which, again... doesn't really work if you don't know the Muppets, but the jokes land.
Well, I mean, I think the way that it works if you are familiar with the Muppets is you are familiar with Gonzo as a very particular Muppet and with a particular backstory that makes the fact that he's going to be our narrator who is not actually in the story, but is like, I think that works really well as the role for Gonzo. if you know who Gonzo is, you get that added perspective. But if you don't know who Gonzo is, it's this weird little blue dude with a funny nose where you're like, yeah, no, that's not Charles Dickens. You're right, Rizzo.
Yeah.
That's not a famous human author, Charles Dickens.
What also allows Gonzo to do what Gonzo does best, which is be the main character.
Yeah.
Like, Gonzo's whole thing is, taking center stage all the time, trying to be important, until he isn't and he's a helper.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of both sides of Gonzo as a Muppet.
Yes.
Which is funny to talk about, which is why they're important. Again, I'm following the Michael Caine approach of treating the Muppets as people.
Yes.
And we get into the story, and it does a really fun take on a faithful adaptation of the book, where we get a lot of direct quotes from the book.
Yes.
Not just character dialogue line, but some of the bleeding in and out of scenes that cut to, which is continues to be relevant throughout the entire film, where we see Dickens' perspective on these characters and not just the actors, because most of those actors are puppets.
Yeah.
So, like, having the actual texture of the words of the book applied to it goes really far and actually does the story some more service than I think some other renditions do, where we actually get to see inside of some of these characters' heads during the fade in and out than we do whenever it's just actors portraying these characters on stage or on a screen.
Yeah, I would very much agree. And I do think, again, this is a case where I think having that context of the Muppets adds a little extra flavor there, and you get a little extra, but you don't need that. They do a fantastic job of rooting this in the story itself in a way where, if this is your first Muppets movie, like you said, there are other better entry points to the Muppets as Muppets, but if you are looking for a good telling of A Christmas Carol, you don't need to know anything about the Muppets to be able to pick up what they're doing with that. And I think that's fantastically well done. And from the get-go.
Whenever we move into the actual story proper, and it's not just Gonzo and Rizzo, which they always kind of take the scene and step back and apply some fourth wall. In like, it's not fourth wall breaking, but it's fourth wall for the story. They're talking directly to us, but they're not like winking and nodding all the time. They're kind of just in the situations.
You get a good narrator who is not making the story about themselves, but is injecting a bit of personality. And you get a little bit of that, like, sort of like Greek chorus-y, like, hey, we're going to have some commentary on what's happening that, like, is like a little bit like meta, but like not so much that you end up getting lost in the, wait, hold on, what's the thread here that we're supposed to be following?
There is not a single meme in the entire thing, right? Like, whenever we talk about like what some of the meta stuff is and being aware of the time and place that a thing is made. Now, we are children of the products of the time the movie came out, right?
Indeed.
This was released in 92.
Yes.
I don't know if I know who directed this.
Oh, good question.
Yeah, my phone's all the way over there, so you're gonna
have
to pretend. We're gonna pretend that you knew exactly this as soon as you say it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But it's one of those things of, we are children of the product of the time that it came out, so maybe we are skewed in believing that this movie super works for us because it works, but whenever we look at a lot of modern comedy, especially a lot of the modern Muppet comedy, even original Muppet comedy, but sorry, the director is
Brian Henson, of course.
Oh yeah,
of
course. No shit.
Yeah.
Should have saw that coming.
Yeah.
But if you look at a lot of modern, I mean, the Muppets have always been a pop show, right? The Muppet Show is a show about getting celebrities on to fuck around with Muppets.
Yes.
Right? And that's what the thing is. So a Christmas Carol version from the Muppets that kind of doesn't do that stuff works really, really well. Where, some of my favorite episodes of the Muppets are where the celebrities in question interact with the characters doing the things that they both do,
mm-hmm.
right? So the go-to episode for me is always the Buddy Rich episode, right?
Mm, uh-huh.
So he plays drums all over the place, and that was the era where he was like, you can play drums on anything.
Yes.
And then he does that with Animal, and it's a delight.
Like, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So like that idea of the Muppets existing outside of a pop culture era,
mm-hmm.
and just doing their thing is kind of novel to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it works really well in context. You don't, again, there's not like a single reference point to pop culture stuff.
Yeah.
It's very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
It's very mellow.
Yes.
And it includes a fair amount of slapstick. But as we move into the actual plot of A Christmas Carol, not just the context around it, we see, especially that first scene, setting the stage with Scrooge in the loan office, the mortgage office with mm-hmm. Bob Cratchit, and mm-hmm. and I don't know. I always know this as Bob Cratchit and one other person.
Yeah.
Is an employee.
Yeah.
Muppets have all the rats there, yes. to be there instead, which a bunch of rats working at a moneylender is.
It's very good.
It's very good.
Yeah.
But the rats want compassion, right?
Yeah. They just want a little heat.
They just want a little
bit
of heat.
It's cold. Yeah. It's so cold.
And it does a really great job of following and setting the stage for what we're going to do with A Christmas Carol,
mm-hmm.
which is we're going to deliver a very serious version of this story that follows a lot of the things that you know word for word.
Mm-hmm.
And then also when we can cut away and include this with a bunch of Muppets.
Yes.
We're going to do that too.
Yes. Well, and it really does a very like lovely job. And I think this is one of the things that the Muppets excel at and is one of the reasons why this works particularly well. The Muppets do comedy incredibly well, but they can use that comedy to set up moments of pathos like fantastically well. And so you get this initial scene, which is like kind of a depressing scene when you think about it, but like you end up with rats in hula skirts at one point, which is like really funny.
It's funny.
It's really funny. And like they're in hula skirts because Scrooge has denied them their request and threatened to fire them. And they're like, nah, look, we're on a beach. This is great. It's so warm.
It's so cold. Oh no, this is all we get? Otherwise we're fired?
Yes.
Oh no, this is great.
Yes. Yes.
And it's delivered line by line,
yes.
right? Like we are following direct quotes from, again, most versions of A Christmas Carol that you would know.
Yes.
Again, either via book. Now, before we get further into this, Chris.
Yes.
Have you read the book?
I have, yes.
I have not.
Hmm.
So I only know it via other media. I've seen it performed on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it, like I said, I've watched many iterations of this story.
Mm-hmm.
They even did that really bad Tom Hardy one.
Oh, God.
That, like, the miniseries. It was, which is a cool idea of, like, what if we did, like, a dark version? Which is funny because it's already a dark story. But like, what if we did, like, a gangster's version of A Christmas Carol?
Mm-hmm.
But Peaky Blinders worked. Why not that again?
Right. Well, see, this is the funny thing, and I think this is, again, one of the reasons why this works very effectively with the Muppets, is that they do a really nice job of making sure that the dark moments are counterbalanced with a lot of levity, and so that like you can see the contrast effectively, which if you go 100% dark the whole way, that gets lost. It's just like everything is bleak and black and gray. Which parts of these are going to let me know what I'm supposed to be upset about versus just being upset about everything? And like this version does that. I mentioned before, the other version that I think is probably my second favorite telling of this is the Disney version with Scrooge McDuck. And I mentioned like when we were watching it, one of the things that will live with me forever is the way that they depict the knocker in that. So, you know, like after so Scrooge has left his office, he's told folks, hey, no more coal. You're going to be cold and like it, or I'm going to fire you. It's like,
they,
hey.
They've ass off for Christmas. Yeah. Right? Like, hey, can we take tomorrow off?
Yes.
And that's not a granted, right?
Yes. The only reason it works is that Bob Cratchit is smart enough to know, don't appeal to Scrooge's humanity, because that's not a thing. It's like, well, you know, no other businesses will be open. And so you will kind of be losing money if we're all here.
It's a bank holiday.
So don't you want to not lose that? Like, we'd have to use all this coal to keep it hot in here. And Scrooge is like, you're wrong, because we all should be working, but you're right that we aren't all working. So fine. You get the day, because everybody else disappoints me.
Right. And we also are introduced to Fred. Scrooge's nephew.
Yes.
Who is his only living relative, who, in the Muppet version, again, we talked about that jacket. It's a good jacket.
It is a good jacket.
The man is well-dressed throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, he's wearing a good jacket. He's also wearing some delightful blue and green plaid pants.
Yep.
And he's got a vest that's just like red flowers on like a cream color.
He might be best dressed until we get to young Scrooge.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it turns out the Scrooges, they have Riz.
Well, and so I think this actually is a very fantastic point, because you mentioned before the set design, which I think is great, and I think we'll talk about that more. But I think it's also good to point out the costuming here, because we even have initially, we didn't mention this. So when you first see Gonzo and Rizzo, they're wearing like gray drab coats.
They're selling apples in a square.
Yes. Rizzo is eating the apples, and Scrooge is like, hey, buddy, we're trying to sell these, and if you keep eating them,
Gonzo is yeah.
Yeah, we're never gonna be able to
stop eating the apples.
Sell them.
Yeah,
and Riz is like, I'm creating scarcity. It's this is how markets work.
Our first brush with market, you know, like market concepts. Yes. I'm creating scarcity by eating all these apples.
Yes, which I love the fact that while they are in the process of doing commerce, they are wearing drab gray lifeless garb. But once they transition to telling the story, Gonzo gets to wear one of the best jackets. It's a great red jacket. He looks good. My man looks good.
It's a red jacket with nice coattails.
Yeah.
It's a nice transition. He's a good looking Muppet.
And Rizzo gets like a nice, I think it's like a Glenn check. He also is wearing a really nice, like, maybe it's a houndstooth, whatever. It's like it's a good jacket. So they both end up in nice clothes. And I think with the nephew, what we also see, you have Scrooge at this point who is wearing like blacks and grays. He looks drab. He looks glum. He looks dreary. His nephew comes in looking lively, wearing patterns, wearing colors. Like, there is a lot of life in the costuming that reflects the fact that you have a character who is, unlike Scrooge, engaged in the community, engaged in being interested in other people, like, is wants to have fun and spread joy. And the clothing mirrors that in a way that is fantastic.
We see that also whenever we finally see Scrooge at the end of the film donate to the charity of the homeless, which Dickens does this great thing throughout the entire work where he consistently turns Scrooge's. We are introduced to Scrooge in that one room, and Scrooge says all these shitty things, and then just like every person who's ever lived, all the shitty things you've ever said at one point in time are always turned against you for forever. That thing that keeps you up at night, that you think about like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, one day that's gonna come bite me in the ass, is just this: the book, the movie, the stage play, right? So yeah, you were talking about the ghosts, right? We were getting into the haunting part of this, which we should... Let's take a step back from A Christmas Carol in general.
Yes.
And let's talk a little bit about the ghost story part of Christmas, and kind of where this piece sits in general as a work of fiction around the Christmas holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding... And I'm not citing any sources anyway, so you're going to have to keep me honest where you know this.
Okay.
is that by the time the Industrial Revolution has hit,
mm-hmm.
the Christmas holiday
mm-hmm.
is kind of really just a Catholic mass, and that's kind of it, and not well celebrated.
Mm.
At least that's the legend of where A Christmas Carol fits, right?
Right.
The Christians have all given up on Christmas, and Dickens writes this one singular work, and it brings the holiday back to the masses, and everyone loves Christmas again. And that's why in World War One, whenever the soldiers are killing each other everywhere, they stop and play soccer,
yes.
or whatever the fuck happens.
Yes. You know, like, yes.
The mythos of where this story is with the holiday, as we would find out in the 90s later, is there's something about a good spooky ghost story with Christmas. A Nightmare Before Christmas works
yeah.
because Dickens associates ghosts with Christmas. There are not a lot of ghost Christmas stories before, like do we kill Christ all the time? Yeah, that's Easter.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that man right. rises from his grave later, not right. on his birthday.
Right.
But it is the end of things.
Right? Well, like, maybe actually close to his birthday, but that's yeah, not important. Hey, yeah.
No, spring, rebirth,
yeah.
winter.
Yes. Yes.
The end of things, right?
It is, yes.
We are talking about Christmas happens around the winter solstice. It
yes.
is the longest, darkest day.
Yes.
I usually, for a while, we were throwing solstice parties mm-hmm. for a couple years in college and post-college. Something about the solstice and those dark times really lend itself really well to ghost stories.
Well, and I think it's interesting because this time of year is very much, and you have it starting off with, and you know, the Catholic faith that this springs forth from very much is in conversation with all this stuff. But you know, you start off with your Halloween, which initially you have your All Hallows Eve, you have your All Saints Day, you have your thinking about the idea of divinity and like the blurring of the threshold between the realm of the physical and the realm of the divine or the dead. And so that starts in October. And then, you know, generally speaking, particularly for the folks that were getting religion, you know, up through this period of time, a lot of farmers, a lot of people who might have had, you know, pagan ancestors or relatives who are going to be celebrating festivals that have to do with death and rebirth around this time. And that includes up until Christmas. Like, you still have the idea of, hey, winter is long and dark and scary. Like, of course there can be ghosts. And the Catholic faith didn't necessarily engage with that in the way that this does. And this does so in such a compelling way. It's like, yeah, we're going to talk about this particular religious holiday in a way that also includes ideas of death, includes ideas of abundance and lack, that has to, like, really fits nicely with that sort of idea of the end of the harvest and can you make it through the long winter and like what does allow you to make it through the long winter. And like, I think part of the thesis here that Dickens is pushing is what makes it through the long winter is not the individualism of capitalism. It is community. And you need to be able to be there for the people that you love. And you need to be able to support them and provide them with the things that they need. And then they will provide you with the things that you need. And the only way to tell somebody who has been locked in the individualism of this money lending that Scrooge is locked into is to scare the shit out of him. So, hey, here's some ghosts.
It lends itself to the legend of where this story fits in the Christmas mythos, right?
Yeah.
Of during the Industrial Revolution, you know, we lost faith or we lost that community aspect. Who could say? I'm sure there's way smarter people than me, I'm sure, have written books about whether or not this is true or not true. But some of these concepts and ideas of the Industrial Revolution was a change that people weren't ready for, and a change that didn't go well. You know,
certainly not for everybody.
Yeah, and certainly not for everyone, especially in London. Right?
Yeah,
which is one of the things Dickens does really well, is continue to bring you back to city living, which was supposed to be a bastion of knowledge, right? London is the cultural center of the world for a lot of the time that we talk about modern storytelling. You know, outside of Rome, right?
Yeah, I mean this is the Imperial London era. This is the era where America has not yet taken up the mantle as the imperial power that the Britain was that for a significant amount of time. The British Empire was the and this is that period. And I think it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned the idea of like, who knows if this was true for everybody at this time, whether this was a period where, you know, Christmas was commercialized for everybody. And I think one of the things that this story actually does paint for you is the fact that Christmas had lost meaning for the folks that were really into industrialism, the folks that were in the city. If you go out to the country, you're not going to find that. You're still going to find that communal spirit. You're still going to find, you know, people are maybe even still like leaning on some of those old pagan traditions. Like they're still doing that community, the spirit, the version of Christmas that this work is getting at. And you see the characters that are poor still engaging in that. Whereas you see Scrooge, who is ostensibly, oh, look, he's made it. He has riches. He's a partner in a firm. Like this is like the goal if you are in industrial society at this time, is to be where Scrooge is. The people that were in that position were the ones that had abandoned the idea that, you know, Christmas actually is a time about compassion and community. And so this is a story that is attempting to remind that kind of person who is very much engaged in industrializing and maybe even benefiting from the fruits of industrialization that, like, hey, don't, you're throwing out the baby. Baby, don't do that.
Yeah. So we get to Ebenezer Scrooge's house and we start dealing with all these fucking ghosts.
Yes.
And, the ghosts in the Muppet version, and this is a thing that I think we could come back to of like just talk about the various versions and the way that they make the ghosts look.
Yes.
Or not come back to. Fuck it, let's do it now.
Yeah, let's go. Do it now. Let's.
The Muppet version has the Ghost of Christmas Past as a very wavy, dreamlike quality, which is usually what we expect of the Ghost of Christmas Past, because what is the past if not wavy and dreamlike, right? Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the Scrooge McDuck version for Disney does for the Ghost of Christmas Past.
I'm trying to remember as well. I remember all the other ghosts and, yeah. The thing that I was mentioning before, the knocker, which is the first experience that we have with an otherworldly.
So let's talk about Marley.
Yeah. Let's talk about Marley. So in this version, of course, a fantastic casting, which I think they do a really nice job of this throughout, like pairing up the right Muppet to the right part. Mm. Perfect Muppets to take the part of Marley are good friends, Statler and Waldorf.
And I'm happy you got their names right, because I always fuck it up, because they're named after hotels.
They are, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is why they're perfect. Like, yes. They're named after ritzy fucking
yes.
hotels.
Yes.
Like, of course they're the ghosts.
And they're crotchety. And, like, they are absolutely exactly the kind of caricature that Marley is supposed to be. And that knocker is one of them. It's the one of their faces. And you get like the actual like felt face on the door. They do a really nice job of like that transition. And like the face works really well. They put it in grayscale. It's very good. It's not particularly scary, though, which I don't think this version is going for scary, at least not with this ghost. Mm. I think other versions of A Christmas Carol really try to lean into making the knocker and some of the, particularly the ghost of future and even a little bit maybe the ghost of past, scary ghosts. And I think most of them fail miserably. The one that I actually do think does a good job is, again, my second favorite version of this. I think the Disney Scrooge version of this, that knocker is terrible. terrifying.
Well, it immediately, it's Goofy, right? Goofy is...
in this, like, really, like...
yeah.
It's, like, it's Uncanny Valley Goofy.
Yeah.
Which, like, again, part of this might have to do with, are you familiar with what this character is supposed to look like, and then seeing it out of place? Like, oh... and then he does the hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo, which, like, right. is actually kind of
and
terrifying.
And also, he falls down the stairs, too. And
oh, absolutely,
he does.
Yes.
Like haunting yeah. Scrooge's mansion is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, which, like, again, just like what the Muppets do, the Scrooge version does a really nice job of, you have this initial, like, really scary moment with Goofy. Where,
we're
going, like,
to have to keep calling him Scrooge McDuck.
You're right, Scrooge McDuck, yeah. You're right. So the McDuck
they're
version.
They're all Scrooges. He's the only...
he's
they're
the
all
only duck.
It's family name Scrooge.
Yes.
He's the only named Scrooge.
Yes.
Family name McDuck.
Yes. So in the McDuck version, they do a really nice job of starting off with this terrifying visage of Goofy. And then you end up with the slapstick, which, like, undercuts that in just the right way. It's like, yeah, we're gonna knock you off balance one way, and then we're gonna kind of knock you off balance the other way, because the goal of that is not to terrify you the entire time. They're playing with those extremes. And I think a lot of versions that, like, lean really hard into terror in those moments fail to recognize that if you don't counterbalance that terror with something, then it loses its edge. It loses its effectiveness. And the Muppets version doesn't even bother with terror here. They're like, nah, we don't need to do that right now. Like, we're going to set the stage for Scrooge's character. You don't need to be scared right now.
They eventually get into heavy topics, right?
Yes.
Like, the Marley representation is, you know, greed and avarice, which, again, the Muppet version does a really good job of, hey, we're literally greed and avarice.
Yes.
They say it in the song.
Yes.
Right?
They do.
And this concept of the eternal damnation, the chains of your soul that you build link by link, right?
Yes.
I can't remember the exact the exact line of, you hammer these link by link with your greed and every penny you pinch or whatever.
Yep,
the fuck.
Yep.
Which is, like, again, if you want to look at sentence structure and exact dialogue choices in a book, holy shit. Who'd have thought Dickens really knows how to do this shit, right? But the Marleys are there to represent this conflict and the end state. The end state is not what we see for Scrooge's eventual end, because, like, Scrooge sees that first, and then eventually we get to the Christmas is yet to come.
Yeah.
And we see that actually everyone fucking dunks on him also.
Yes.
After he's already been opened up and revealed to be a person. But the first thing is, hey, eternal damnation awaits.
Yeah.
You old sinner, you.
Yes.
You know, and it's not even... it's interesting, at least in a lot of versions, it's not... you don't operate with God in your heart, right? There's no faith discussion with... the damnation Scrooge is facing.
Yes.
It's just damnation for being a dickhead.
Yes.
And it's very open and shut, reversible style of damnation. It is not, if you go to Sunday or you go to church every Sunday also, haha, the Lord will forgive you. No, it is, you must do good things with the time you have left on this earth. Otherwise, you're fucked.
Yes.
For forever. And they're not even, it's not even a representation of hell that you would think of from the Christian faith variety.
Mm-hmm.
It is, they are weighed down by their own greed.
Mm-hmm.
Money gave them power. They are now powerless and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just tired. Well, the Marley and the Muppets, the Marleys, it's just a tired ghost. They're just tired. And what scares people as they get older more than, like, what? No, whenever you die, you're going to be even more tired.
Yeah. No, literally this week, I think to myself, God, I wish I was just a little less tired. I just like a little less.
And
I'm not even that tired.
Yeah. It's not like, we're not tired, but, like, we're tired. But, like, this idea of what is eternal rest is rest. But whenever you are greedy, you don't get to rest. You have to drag your life behind you link by link. it's a great representation of the, like, hell, right?
Yeah.
It is, there's not fire and brimstone.
Yes.
It is, hey, you're going to be a fucking weird, sleepy ghost and never get to lay, never get to put your fucking feet up.
So this is, I'm gonna bring Dante back up, which we, we
talked
Dante
about
earlier.
We talked about Dante whenever we were watching the movie. Eventually, there's a gag in the film where they show Aristotle, Dante, Shakespeare, and someone else.
Then it's Gonzo.
And then it's Gonzo.
Yes, as Charles Dickens.
And Rizzo. Rizzo's also there. And then the heads slide against him.
Yes. But like this was the Dante conception of hell. Like the layers of hell, you know, specifically have to do with like the things that you did during life. And so you end up carrying the weight of your decisions versus a kind of hell where it's like, oh, we're just going to torture you. And like, does it matter what the torture is? No, like a hell where the point is that you are haunted by the things that you did in your life and that those things can actually weigh on you and can be the source of that torment. And the Marleys are like a version of your Dante hell where it's like, yeah, these chains represent all of the ways in which I was weighed down by my own desire for wealth and failure to embrace compassion. And here we go. That's the personal hell that I've built for myself.
The eventual, like, ghosts. So whenever we get into the ghosts, and this is what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Now that we're through the Marleys.
Yes.
And it's a great representation. And in the book, in every interpretation, I'm trying to think of one who isn't scary in the way that I think is effective. Mm. And I would actually say Scrooged.
Oh, sure.
Which I want to, Scrooged is, we'll talk about like good representations of ghosts eventually, but like Scrooged does not do well, I think, with their version of Marley.
Yeah.
And I like Scrooged.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yep.
There are systems to these spirits, which we talked about as we watched the movie also, and we'll talk about that with the...
Well, I think that's it. I think two of them actually are. I think past and future are, but we'll talk about the ways in which present is less that way.
And past is like, oh, I've seen this, or I've done 1900 Christmases before.
Yeah.
Which is the start of the Christian calendar, right?
Yes. Yeah. Very, very clearly like, hey, we've done 1800 of these. Like, and you know, the year is the 1800, whatever. So good news. I've been around since that.
Yeah. Where, again, there are multiple versions of this. The Muppets have the very dreamy, swimmy.
Yeah.
But usually that golden era, that tinted lens, right, mm-hmm. that you see everything through. And we deal with Scrooge's childhood, which is, in the conversation of nature versus nurture, Dickens is like, well, sad boys be sad forever, right? And, well, his family hated him and wanted him to do his homework over the holidays.
Yeah.
And because he had to do homework all the holidays at his boarding school and no one ever came to get him, that's why he's a prick. And that's not wrong.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So he's a sad boy for forever. His headmaster is played by Sam the Eagle, which I would assume at some point in time, someone should comment that Sam does not have a British accent, which would have been funny to me, but maybe that's a joke too highbrow for the Muppets. You know, Sam the Eagle, the most patriotic of the Muppets.
Yes. Yes.
Should be saying something about the fact that everyone is British.
Yeah.
Especially in the 1800s.
Yes.
That man fought in the war.
Yeah. Right? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. He was there in 1812.
Yes.
Let alone the late 1700s, but that man fought that war twice. they do a great job of building compassion for Scrooge. I mean, like Dickens, not to put my thought on what I think is a perfect piece of thing, which is A Christmas Carol, but Dickens really builds this compelling, compassionate argument for children and what it means to care for children, and even a person of means, right? Like, you're doing the best for your child, what you think is best, but what's lacking is the family experience. And it, no matter how much money you have to go to a good school or do whatever, does not mean a good child and a good person that may make. And it's one of those things that you could point to for forever and go, yeah, no, fucking course. You have to have these other relationships in your life to build meaning, not meetings. I'm sure he has plenty of meetings. But to build meaning for what it is and what's important. And Scrooge is told that what's important is learning in books, which is money. And the Muppet version, we spend as much time there as I think that we should.
Well, and I think absolutely should give credit to Michael Caine for the performance that he gives in this particular section, I think. There's a song that ends up getting cut out of this section that I think, you know, does the piece a disservice. Although I do think that Michael Caine does a really nice job, even without that, and a lot of it is just facial expressions that he has. Like, seeing the impact of some of the stuff that he sees and the way that it plays across his face. Like, when he is looking at himself in the schoolhouse, and the way that you can see a moment of pain play across Michael Caine's face, and the way that you can see adult Scrooge like kind of like taking a second to go, I was really lonely and that hurt, and seeing that pain actually, like, seeing the child actor like actually like being upset, and then seeing the response from Caine being like, I am upset to revisit this moment because that was hard and nobody really recognized that. Just fantastically well done. And we don't need to dwell on it a lot because the performance really does communicate so much of that information for us.
We see that even more. Well, I won't say more. We see it again also. Whenever we do Ebenezer Scrooge falling in love.
Yeah.
And to also, like, to talk about that specifically cut scene.
Yeah.
Is the adult Ebenezer reconciling the fact that he walked away from love.
Yes.
And that is the scene that is cut. We watch the version where that scene is cut because that is the version on Disney Plus. They have, if you watch this movie... to lead into the holiday season, allow me to tell you to go to the extras portion of the movie.
Pro tip.
And just watch the version that says includes the cut song. And if you...
2 minutes longer.
It's just 2 minutes longer. If you fuck that up and watch the other version, or you're more used to seeing the other version, I wanted to look this up where I wanted to figure out when they cut the song.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
We talked about it and we didn't look that up. Because I'm not a genius. I'm not the internet. You have the internet. You can find out. You would look at the same wiki article that I would. Sure. But they do have the song performed separately. There's an argument for pacing.
Mm.
I think that the pacing of that scene is challenging in the moment.
Mm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, if you were like, I think the movie is better with it out there, I would hear you. An argument where someone could say that and go, well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think it's fine with it in there. The song is good.
Yeah.
Michael Caine does a great job of reacting to sorrow.
Yes.
And he is background vocals in that song. And that might be the weakest part, is that I think it does the movie service later.
Yeah.
Whenever he is singing as Ebenezer, enlightened Ebenezer Scrooge,
yes.
Where he's like, haha, what's this? You know, it's that moment.
Yes.
Christmas Day. And then he gets to sing and dance and pull a prank, which honestly, his first thing that he does as soon as he's like, I love Christmas. Fuck you.
Yes. 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 We'll get that. That whole thing is kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
But I do. One of the things that I do like is I think that it works well that Kane isn't the best vocalist because
it's earnest.
It is. And you get song expressing emotion in this version.
He literally cries.
Yeah.
He cries while singing, which I don't know how often you sing and cry at the same time, Chris.
We don't need to talk about it.
I've also taken a shower. but it the emotional performance is there, so much so that his vocal performance is exactly what it needs to be, which is
it does a really nice job of mirroring the fact that this is somebody who's not good at expressing emotion. So, like, that voice shouldn't be pristine. That voice should be off. It should be... This is somebody who doesn't know how to, like, do this well.
The thing you pointed out as we watched it is that the young version of Ebenezer walks away, and right after that is the same moment that the older version of Ebenezer walks back into frame.
Yes.
Of that regret,
yes.
Right? Just wallowing in it and living it and experiencing it again is totally removed from that entire movie.
Yeah.
And it like I said, there's a pacing conversation that I think I would have that is that point made clear without that song in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. But we kind of move from Scrooge in the past to Scrooge receptive in the present.
Yeah.
Hear me and know me better, man.
Yeah.
in a way that I think that song in the movie with the Muppets helps.
Yeah.
Like we open Scrooge up, we crack open the nut that is Ebenezer and kind of allow some humanity to flow out besides just the tragic child part,
yes,
into the failed relationship part,
yes,
which especially as an adult watching this film, I think as a child watching this film, you don't need that scene. I think as an adult watching this film, you kind of need that scene.
Yeah,
it kind of really, you know, cracks the nut open on him, and like we get to experience his sorrow in a way that's a lot more attainable for most only normally traumatized people. It's a little bit more relatable than just the kid part. No, he was fucked for forever. And you can see that whenever he fucks up a good thing, right?
Well, and part of what I think that does very effectively is, as a child, you see this is somebody who did not get to experience love as a child the way that he should have. What you get from his relationship with Belle and that scene is, here is somebody who did experience love and just
it works it's super effective, and it's why, like, if you think the movie should be without that song or think the movie should be, send us an email at fugazipod or us at fugazipod.com, right? That's the email.
Yeah
us at fugazipod.com and tell me why that song should or shouldn't be in it, and we'll happily read that. And I'll just send you an email back. Or Chris will send you an email back. We won't talk about it on the podcast, but we'll at least tell you. Or ask us in person. Buy a beer. The thing that we move on from The Ghost of Christmas Past, come now and know me better, man. It only works when I say it the third time. So just wait until later.
Right.
The Ghost of Christmas Present... the spirit, and they're referred to as ghosts, which I think is funny, but they're spirits, and spirits are different. If you want to talk about the laws of fae.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
And, like British.
Man.
Anyway, let me get into that for a little bit. But the idea that there is a spirit that is associated with a singular day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his job between him and his 1800 brothers before him is to celebrate Christmas for a day.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
He gets one.
Yes. He lives for one day.
And come now and know me better, man.
Yes.
That's the third time. is, you know, he's a goldfish, and he's a dumb idiot. He lives in the now.
Yes.
You know, he lives in the now. He says, I live in the now.
Yes.
And, what's he do? He parties. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, the introduction, and like, I do think it's, and this is something that I think the effective versions of this story tend to do. We get like different lighting and color changes when it comes to the
green and yellow.
Yes.
Green and yellow.
And some oranges and browns with gross. This particular. Yes. So you're talking about like your fall harvest, your bounty, your like think of a cornucopia.
Gourds.
Yes. Yes.
We're talking a lot about gourds now.
Yeah.
A lot of squash.
There were some squash in that room.
Yeah.
There were some. And this character is introduced a larger than life, literally a huge, like can't fit in the room initially because he's so big, and is just surrounded by harvested squashes, pumpkins, wheat, like all of this plenty of, hey, we're in the moment. Let's eat and be merry. Like very rotund, very much like a looks a little Santa Clausy, but like what if Santa Claus was like Thanksgiving like instead of being red and black and ho ho ho. Yeah. Like very much about this is indulgence and not in the gluttony sort of fashion, indulgence in the community and there's plenty for everybody kind of way. And it's fantastic.
And I think it's, I mean, hey, allow me to hit a metaphor with a fucking hammer here for a second. And I believe it's a beautifully presented nail, but there's something about, you know, calling to Scrooge over and over again and like, hey, yeah. I'm Christmas. Know me better, man.
Yeah.
Like, come learn what I actually am and all about me. The entire story about Christmas. Hey, the person who represents this Christmas reminds Scrooge over and over and over again to come know me better, man. The only thing it asks you to do is to jump in, right? How do you learn to love Christmas? Just jump in. Experience Christmas. What is Christmas? I don't know. We'll go look at a bunch of different Christmases and figure it out. And I think there's something to the peeling the veil back over and over again on how other people do the holiday that works really well, especially in the Muppet version where we get to do... Not every spirit gets multiple songs, but he gets a song and it works. Mm-hmm. And then the Muppets bring him back to do the end credits song, which I don't think that's necessarily unique to the Muppet version, but I think it always works to, you know, the spirit of Christmas present,
yes,
to come back before you celebrate or the day you celebrate Christmas,
yes,
right? The this person that you know that's personifying the day,
yes,
to come back to you, you know, as you leave with Christmas in your heart,
yes,
and with joy. Whatever, you know, fuck it. But there's something to that where all of these iterations on this story over and over and over again, they know what that is, and it's unbelievably effective.
Yeah.
It is a sniper shot to the part of me that has feelings.
Yeah.
You know, like, sure. yeah, we got it. Yes. We got him.
Yes.
But he's a great ghost. He's a good one.
He is purposely the most accessible of the three ghosts. Like, easily, like, the one that it is the... Like, he is a ghost that I think you can... You are meant to watch that and go, I would love to have Christmas dinner with that ghost tomorrow. Like, the ghost of Christmas past is, like, dreamy and ethereal and, like, kind of otherworldly in a way that you're like, I appreciate what's happening here, but that feels... as it should, like it's distant. That does not feel like something that is supposed to be grasped. This ghost, like, man, feels weighty, feels present, like feels very much like, again, this is somebody that you can and should be hanging out with today.
The thing that the Muppet version of this movie does really, really well, we talked earlier about the introduction lighting, right? And it's not just this version. There are other versions where we deal with light, we deal with even multiple black and white iterations deal yep. with fire, right? They deal with the crackling hearth, right?
Yes.
The things that mean warmth.
Yes.
And the tones are used to be warm tones.
Yes.
It's an idea of a lived person.
Yeah.
And man, like Scrooge gets fucking dunked on. Like Fred and his wife are just all about like, oh, is it a rat? Is it a cockroach? No.
Yeah, name something unpleasant.
Yeah, I mean your shitty uncle.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then we kind of move on. Like, we see the spirit get older and older and older, which the Muppets do a great job yes. of building in the tension that the ghost of Christmas Present is aging.
Yeah, hair getting slowly whiter and whiter.
He should lose it, which as someone who's... you know, like no bias, but like he should go bold. So like they do that great job of building in the drama, right? Of the, well, when the bell tolls 12, cause we're dealing a lot with time and, yes. and bells and what these things are. When the bell tolls 12, I'm gone. I'm done.
Yes.
And then the Muppet version, I believe I said at the time, crosses his arm like he's putting out his best fucking hip hop album.
Yes.
And then ghosts.
Well, and like he literally does say, no one can stop the tolling of the bells.
Like, yeah.
It's like literally like, yeah. no, time.
Time that stops
hey,
for no
Scrooge,
man.
This isn't, it's just going to keep going. Like you don't get to press pause.
We move from that directly into, you know, future.
Yes.
Right. And we set up. Hey, before you watch a Muppet Christmas Carol, you should talk to your kids about death. Because you probably don't want them to find out about death through like a holiday movie, but maybe you do. I don't know. The Muppets do it pretty all right, but like also they make death kind of scary. Scrooged is the one where he goes through the cremation, right?
I think so.
Where he's like trapped in the box, and because there's no grave, they just like he burns up through it or whatever. But yeah, like we have to talk about winter.
Mm-hmm.
And to talk about winter, we have to talk about the seasons.
Yeah.
And this is the season
endings.
Of the end,
yeah.
right? Before the new beginnings of spring.
Yeah.
We've already dealt with the now, the plenty.
Yes.
We've talked about the past. We have to talk about the future.
Which, hey, again, you want to talk about Christmas and what that's supposed to be about. You have a holiday just stuck right in the middle of winter. Of the season when endings are happening that is about rebirth. That was not a mistake. That was not an accident.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's not Easter.
Yeah.
Right? Easter is the... we're now in the heart of spring.
Yes.
And it's the... Always usually around, like, the early signs of April or...
Yep.
Chris, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's usually April.
It's,
like, it's
the,
not
it the,
always.
It's is this like the first full Sunday of April?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
There's a timing. It's much like Thanksgiving where it's like it's always there's a thing like that. It's,
okay.
Yeah. So and it you can be
you
April.
And you couldn't explain it to me right now and
not easily. No.
Huh.
Yeah. It's not important.
Christmas is easier, right?
Christmas like, is, yeah. No, Christmas, same time every year.
Yeah. This idea that, I don't want to talk us up, but we did a 6-mile walk today down the Akron Bike and Hike. And this is a trail that I've sent Chris a ton of, a paved trail. Sorry, don't think we're hiking. We're not fucking plebes. This is a paved society. No, we took a walk down where I sent Chris a ton of pictures of fall foliage, mm-hmm. and it's where I get my kicks from all the leaves, right? And we did that walk, and it's the first time I've done that walk all the way down to the falls,
mm-hmm.
where all the leaves are gone.
Yeah.
And it is an era of dead thing, right?
Yes.
And in the end of October... As much as October wants to tell you that it is the end of things,
mm-hmm.
post-Thanksgiving is when the leaves are gone,
when October is but the beginning of the end.
Yeah, you can see, you dwell on death. By the time you hit November, December, dead things are everywhere. Right, like the leaves in the woods are still there. They're no longer beautiful. They're now just things you crunch on. And this idea that death is so closely for me tied to winter and in the end of things, in such a way that like there needs to be more Christmas ghost stories. And I know there are, but we have a great one.
Yeah.
We have one perfect one.
Yes.
But the thing is, as we did that walk, 6 miles, by the way. Okay. Thank you. We saw a couple good dogs.
We did. Yeah. A
couple good dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. The big fluffy white one.
Yeah. That big fluffy white one was good. But the husky-ish one that I turned around and looked at it.
Yeah. Again. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
Also, did you see the dog that jumped up on the bench up ahead of us?
Yes, I did.
That was so good.
I did.
The owner was like trying to like turn around and walk back, and the dog was like, no, I want to be on this bench for a little bit.
Yeah.
It was very good.
Nice. It was nice. It was a good day for it.
Yes.
And, but yeah, you can see farther, right? Like there's no leaves in the way. All the bushes are dead. You can see farther.
Yes.
You can experience this weird sensation that you can't in the spring whenever everything starts to grow back, which is what's all around you. And A Christmas Carol really delivers on that with all of its specific talk of the future and making the future scary.
Yeah. Well, and you go from, again, we have the Ghost of Christmas Present, you have warm lighting, you have browns, you have greens, you have reds, you have blues that are very vivid, they are very alive. Then we get to the Ghost of Christmas Future, and we are back to most of the time that we spend with Scrooge before the ghosts show up. We get grays, we get like grayish blues, we get blacks. The same thing happens when we're dealing with the Ghost of Christmas Future. We go back into that color palette that is very like muted blues, grays, blacks. It is not warm. It is cold. Everything is very cool. Everything has a blue tint to it. It is very much a, hey, things are cold now. Winter has arrived. Things are ending.
Which is interesting because like the past scenes are similar, but it's a brighter white, right? It's a snow white.
Yeah.
It's that powder before it's been tread.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's the feeling that you get.
That's early winter when you're still having a good time
that
with the
first snowfall.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, we have to shovel the driveway.
And it's about like, oh, let's start a fire and let's get some hot cocoa. It's like that kind of.
Yeah. No, the Christmas Future is very much like that.
January, February.
February snow.
Will this
like,
ever end?
Like, oh my God, we had fucking plans today?
Yeah.
God damn it. Like, fucking can't go anywhere. The color palette swap. Again, we didn't talk much about the stage design for the Muppets version, but those sets are incredible. We deal with Scrooge's room for the Ghost of Christmas Past, and it lights up his drapes, which are, you know.
Oh, it's so good! It's very good.
His bed drapes or whatever the fuck those are called.
You get a delightful. Initially, you have Gonzo and Rizzo outside looking in, and like the window that they're looking through just like turns into this bright point of like blue light.
Yep. It's great. And then like he splits the curtains on the bed, and it's,
which there's, you get this great shadow of him against this like white background with, because of the way his bedding works, you have like almost looks like filament or filigree.
Uh-huh.
It's so good.
It's so good. And then by the time we get to Christmas Future, those same bed drapes are stolen from his home.
Turns out they're very cheap.
Yeah, it turns out they're cheap, which is why you can see through them. So, like, they do I think, honestly, my least favorite Muppets are in the future.
Mm.
They use ugly Muppets. They also use ugly Muppets whenever Fred does his spiel against Ebenezer.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, it's kind of ugly. It's an ugly thing to be doing.
Yeah. Anytime people are talking trash, they are generally not Muppets. They are generally not attractive Muppets that are doing it.
Well, they use Pig Muppets, but they use Pig Muppets in like specific ways, and like, but also Miss Piggy's there too, and like Miss Piggy's always talking shit, which is great.
Yeah.
But like they use in the scene with Fred and the present, they use like some ugly Muppets.
Yeah, they're, like there are some monsters.
They're toadish. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some Muppets that look like they might not be, like, a lot of Muppets are clear analogs to animals. Like, you've got a couple Muppets in that scene where they look closer to, like, your monster Muppets versus your animal Muppets.
Yep. And the present, when they do the scene where everyone shows up with all the stolen shit from Scrooge's house, the head of the thing is a spider with...
They're all bugs.
Yeah, they're all bugs.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know if that's, it's all pigs talking shit, and then it's all bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know, it works. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying, like, that's the scene that I think using the Muppets are the least effective, or they pick the least effect. They work in the moment, but they don't work for the narrative for me, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think I do, and I think part of what's tricky is that until we get to the Cratchits, the future is so much not, like, people, like, even the past where we're going to a space where it's populated by people that we don't know, they are people that are familiar to Scrooge, so there is some connection, and so those people, like, Fozziewig gets to be like Fozzie is the Muppet. So like you get those also, Muppets.
Also Rolf's playing piano.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about Rolf.
It's great. Yeah. He's wearing a really good vest.
No, he looks nice. He always looks nice though.
He does. Yeah. Classy Muppet.
Yeah.
But like when you get to the future, you are dealing with Muppets that are not specifically connected to Scrooge in that same way.
And while we're in a, I guess the one thing it does that is effective is that it puts us with foreign Muppets.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these are not, we see some friendly Muppets and some not friendly Muppets, but by the time we get to future, these are Muppets that don't look the same like the other Muppets.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that if you wanted to build that sense of discomfort, then that works. That is effective. I don't know. I just don't think I liked it, and I don't think it. I think I didn't like it at the way that I think they wanted me to not like it. I think I liked it. I didn't like it in a different way, which is a hard thought to convey. Now, if you know what I mean. I just thought it was icky. I don't know. We get to Scrooge's death. The Ebenezer gravestone. Can I sponge off the writing of this gravestone?
Well, but before we do that, we make a stop.
Oh yeah. Well, it's weird for me to do this movie, this book.
Yeah.
This play.
Yeah.
And not really talk about the Cratchits very much.
Yeah.
I think density wise, they have the most songs.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yes.
It's Kermit. Mm-hmm. We didn't even say this. Kermit.
Yes. Yeah. Now this is important. Yeah.
So like Kermit plays Mr. Cratchit. Miss Piggy plays Mrs. Cratchit.
Mm-hmm.
They turn Emily Cratchit into an actual character with Miss Piggy. They give her some of Miss Piggy, some of Bob Cratchit's lines. But also like she's a sassy broad, right? Yeah. Like in the original book, right? Like, yeah, to the founder of the feast, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. My ass. A toast. Yes. Doing that character with Miss Piggy, they don't, and she's not a like a super passive character, but I think they actually work that really well. They do a lot with a weird thing is that I don't know how many canonical Muppet representations there are of Miss Piggy and Kermit the Frog being married and having children, but all the women being pigs and all the girl childs being pigs and all the boy childs being frogs.
That apparently is how that works.
Yeah, that's apparently how that works in the Muppet universe. So if you needed to know what it looks like when Muppets breed.
Man, thank God we've solved that mystery.
We've solved it. We've done it.
Thank God.
It's how race works, right? Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Anyway. Yeah, let's not get into to Dickens and race. That's maybe...
I turned to you while watching this and said, hey, I think this story hates Jews.
And my response was, Justice, don't look too much into Dickens and his thoughts about Jews and other races.
Yeah.
Maybe that's best left. Yeah, he is someone who, this is how I pitched it, is like he's someone who really does a very good job of telling stories about economic plight, and in particular, like highlighting the ways in which, like industrialization and capitalism of the time impacted kids. Like really, really good about that. Not so great about race.
Who'da thunk?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Cratchits, again, it's funny because they're like the secondary moral heartbeat to the entire story. Kermit being there to do this, just I guess I took it for granted, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Again, we never even said that it was Kermit.
Yeah, which this is a situation where, like, if you are familiar with the Muppets, of course Kermit is Bob Cratchit. Like that, like, you don't need to be told that.
Yeah.
You will just assume because that is the perfect thing to do. But if you're not familiar with the Muppets, Kermit is absolutely the perfect casting for that role.
Well, they do the thing whenever Christmas Present, whenever it's Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim.
Yes.
Which, again, it's weird that his family calls him Tiny Tim. Anyway, but
I mean, my family calls me Uncle Brother, so, like, you know, sometimes sometimes names are interesting in families.
As someone who has a weird name most of the time, I'm just happy that they get mine right. Whenever they come back from church or whatever, and they literally do, like, some scat and some harmonies.
Yeah, they're real good harmonies.
And I was like, holy shit, like, Jim could do Kermit well, because 92 is already Brian. It's
yes.
Brian, right?
Yes.
They know how to make Kermit sing. Like,
yep.
Jim could do it with Rainbow Connection,
oh my
and like
God.
That stuff was out there. Oof. But like, they like Kermit doing scat while someone's doing harmonies over top of it, and it sounds like everyone's kind of just slightly bad at it while being really good at it.
Yeah,
is like, holy shit.
It's real good.
It's really good.
It's real good.
Because the entire time I was like, this is not an easy voice to do.
And it really does a remarkable job of characterizing those two characters.
Yeah.
The way that they play off of each other, the comfortability that they have, the fact that you can immediately tell, oh, this is not the first time they're doing this.
Yeah.
Like, that these two sing together, You learn a lot about their relationship very quickly in a very effective way.
Yeah, you know, it's his son, and it's not just that that's his son. He has another son. He has two other daughters than this. But, you know, they spend a lot of time together because he needs a lot of help.
Yeah,
and they have fun with it, right?
Yes.
It's not suffering. It's you know, Tim wants to go to church to make sure that everyone remembers that Jesus could make the lame walk and the blind see, and that's why he wants to be at church on Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Which the Muppets do. This is what I also we talked about while watching it, is the Muppets talk about God.
Yeah.
Which is a thing the Muppets don't usually do.
Yep.
Which with this material you kind of can't not.
Yep.
And to be clear, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It is a Christian holiday. And
yeah.
Hey, to talk about God in a very specific Christian story, sure. Go for it.
Makes sense.
It is weird. I don't know. It's kind of weird to see Kermit be like, haha, Jesus. and I'm going to be like, you're dating a pig.
Well, but I think this does, and I knew we were going to eventually get to this. This does do something similar to what the Peanuts end up doing in their Christmas special, which is a reminder of the ways in which, like, I think that there is an idea of God that is not compatible with the compassion and, like, there's a commercialized God that I think a lot of people during Dickens's time were dealing with due to industrialization, and that the Peanuts are responding to in their special, because that happens again, you know, with us in the 80s and 90s. I mean, it's been happening forever. It's
just a cycle.
Yeah, it turns out that we're very bad at, you know, not falling into the traps of capitalism, because they're very seductive traps.
Yeah.
But like both of those specials endeavor to remind people that the God of Christmas, the Jesus of Christmas, is this compassionate, caring, giving, loving character.
Well, he's just a baby.
I mean, sure, but that's a very compassionate baby.
Yeah, no.
Just as that baby, like, was, like, it's born just, like, radiating goodwill. Yeah.
People show up to, like, be like, hey, you're here.
Yeah, and are like, I just want to be bathed in that baby's good vibes.
And someone shows up and plays drums and no one kicks them out.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I think this baby would really like hearing problems for forever. Allow me. To get back to it. Again, we deal with the spirit of the future. We deal with the Cratchits.
And I think we started talking about the future with the Cratchits in response to the fact that we have to deal with death.
Yes.
And I think the Cratchits, and then eventually the scene that you started to discuss, are the moment when we have to reckon with death in this story. Because why do we show up at the Cratchits?
Sorry, this was 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is gone.
Yeah. But Justice, why are we at the Cratchits? Why did we show up here? What does the ghost have to show?
Yeah, the first time or the last time, right? Like, death.
Yeah.
We're dealing with death. And the idea that, Tim's going to be buried on the hill to overlook the ducks. And he always liked ducks.
Oh, God.
And having Kermit do that, holy.
I know.
Chris, you were sitting next to me and you saw that I didn't cry. And I want the record to show that. It works. Like, it's a great story. And again, like, if you need to describe death in a way, or you haven't talked about death,
mm-hmm.
This is not the Christmas story for you. Deal with the Santa Claus. Like, do divorce with your kids first.
Sure. Yeah.
Which the Santa Claus is actually, if you want to talk about, like, movies, like, regardless of what you think about Tim Allen, but if you want to talk about, like, movies that, like, are effective at the thing that they do, the Santa Claus is a great modern film about, like, divorce, especially around critical components and life-changing alterations that are the holidays.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That movie does it really well.
Yeah.
And I think really drives that stuff home. And I think that's why people are still craving for more of the Santa Claus, and it's not Tim Allen going, rrr, 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 rrr. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's mostly about, hey, they wrote a movie about a modern family situation.
Yep.
We're getting long in the tooth. I will say that.
Well, we're on a third ghost, so
yeah.
We can,
yeah.
We can start to,
yeah, let's wind down a little bit. The next thing.
Yes.
And maybe this is a very British thing. And I want to say this is a very British thing. But
okay.
The next thing Scrooge does as soon as he wakes up.
Yes.
Is he's like, buy me a fucking bird and let's pull a joke.
Yeah.
Right? And like, I'm not for it. The entire time we were sitting down watching the movie, and Ebenezer is like, get me the prize turkey in the window. And it's like, if someone showed up to my house Christmas Day with a whole fucking bird that we were going to have to be responsible for, they better bring their own fucking oven.
And again, importantly, Justice, this is not just someone. This is your shitty boss. Who your wife is like, I hate that guy.
Yep.
He's the worst. He treats you like crap.
And he shows up and he's like, we talked
and
about...
acts like a jerk.
We talked about you not being at work today.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, we talked about me not being at work today. And you're not at work today. And I'm not at work today. And Miss Piggy is like, and he's not at work today, you motherfucker.
Yes.
Like, I will crush you. And like, and he's like, and you're not at work today because I brought all these people over for
And I'm
going to
give you a raise. And yeah. Here's this turkey.
Yeah. Which I think the version I'm more familiar with is that he makes him a partner and not just gives him a raise.
Yes, you are correct. That is often the, oh, hey, good
so,
news,
so
Bob.
Maybe is that more book accurate? Yeah. Is that he just gets a raise and doesn't get made partner?
No, I think he makes him partner in the book.
Huh.
But it, at this point, it is difficult to disentangle all of the various versions.
Yep.
But like that is... Part of the whole idea is that, hey, I am going to elevate this person to a level that is more commensurate with the work that they're doing, and I'm not going to be so stingy about blah, blah,
and
blah.
And he
blah,
leaves
blah.
Coal for the rats. They don't get a raise, but they do get
Yeah, but
heat.
They do get to have a warm...
Yeah.
Yes.
Final thoughts? Anything that we didn't touch on?
I mean, I think something that we've kind of... skirted around a bit, but have perhaps tangentially touched on, is the fact that, you know, I think during its time, the purpose of this story was to act as a reminder or act as a vehicle to convey what Christmas is hypothetically supposed to be about. Community, compassion, goodwill.
Sales, Black Friday.
And this is the thing. It's like, hey...
We're recording this on the Saturday after Black Friday.
We are, and like this is
the first official day of the holiday season. Well, yeah, yesterday, but like,
yeah, but yeah.
Decorations are going up today.
Exactly. Yeah, there are now people with snowmen in their yards.
Yeah,
but this work is explicitly attempting to point something out in light of the fact that industrialization has made individualism and selfishness a more prevalent attitude during the Christmas season, and attempting to be like, hey, here's a corrective to that. Here's a reminder of what it means to be, you know, Christian to your neighbor, what goodwill towards men means, which is supposed to be something that you firmly embrace during this season. And I think it's a part of what makes this story resonate so much continually is that we have not escaped from the problem that Dickens was writing about. We are still dealing with a holiday that has been overly commercialized, that is, you know, capitalism has like sucked it in and used it as an excuse for people to spend money and to make money and to like show your status and your wealth, versus this is a holiday that's about community and reconnecting with family and giving. And so I think, just to make it super explicit, this story worked then because it was a corrective against that, and it continues to work today because that message is still important and still necessary.
I think the primary takeaway for me is that the thing that Dickens does that I think a lot of versions don't is that Ebenezer Scrooge does not fix this in a single Christmas. This is a catalyst for change, but we see that you don't always get it explicitly said, but the whole thing with Tiny Tim is that he becomes like a second father to him and helps raise him and guides him towards a more prosperous future than what he had before. Not just because his dad is his partner, but also because he has...
Scrooge is around and as an active part of that family and their life.
And the thing that they drive home is, you know, like holding Christmas in your heart all year round, which sounds fucking stupid, right? Whenever you, like, you're not leaving a tree up all year round unless like you're really tired, right? And the lights,
look,
you worked hard to put the lights up. If you have LED color changing bulbs and like, you can be like, no, these are now Easter lights.
Yeah.
Hey, for Valentine's Day, you can just swap the colors, whatever. But like this idea of holding the ideas of charity and community and hope and the things that like Dickens tries to drive home as the holiday spirit in you for the entire year, and let that be your guiding moral compass, which is what Ebenezer Scrooge eventually does, changes the lives of him and those around him in as a general means for good. And that's the takeaway. Not that, hey, fuck you, buy everyone a bunch of shit for one day. Like, hey, you're a shitty boss, but if you like give everyone a free fucking turkey for the holidays, then they'll like doing overtime. That's not like, that's not the end message. The end message is very specifically stated. Not always, and not every iteration. I will say the Muppets at least say it out loud.
Yep.
Is that it's not this. Tiny Tim does not continue to exist in the future because Scrooge
that one Christmas
gave his dad a raise.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's not what it is.
Yeah.
It's that he became a part of his life.
Yes.
And that's the thing to take away, or that I'm taking away from this, is it's more than just the season, which is what they want you to think every time, right? Mm-hmm. But like, especially the holidays are weird. December's weird.
Mm-hmm.
We are post cuffing season, right?
Yeah.
Like we're entering the long dark, and we're gonna come out of it other people, and to come out of it with hope is challenging. Like, right, but that's not the default mentality that I come out of December and into mid-January and into February. Like, we had to make up a whole holiday about loving the person that you're with in February because we're so miserable by the time February rolls around. Oh. Right? Like, it's challenging. And I think this story is one of the most effective ways, whenever you get all of it, you get all the context, that I think it's told. Bonus round.
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So I said earlier, I had thoughts about podcasts of past, present, and future.
Mm-hmm.
So out of all the movies that we've watched together so far and have talked about, which one do you think, or not even that we've talked about on the podcast, but which movies do you think that you've enjoyed the most?
What an excellent question. I think there is definitely a special place in my heart for the Creed series.
Yeah.
I think, and in particular, I saw something recently that was talking about, like, hey, I think it was a Discord somewhere, where they're like, are there any good depictions of, like, men reckoning with masculinity in media? And people are like, I don't know, Fight Club. It's like, no, Fight Club has been co-opted.
No,
like,
yeah, no.
Maybe the original intention was to, you know, show how toxic masculinity can be and to not do that. It's like, no, I've got one. Creed.
Yeah.
It's Creed. Like, do you want to see, like, a character attempt to, like, reckon with the toxic aspects of masculinity and, like, come out on the other side? And, like, not do it in a manner where the entire time is like, fuck women. We're like, the entire time he's like, no, I got a really good partner. She's pretty awesome. And if it weren't for her,
this wouldn't happen.
Maybe wouldn't know what I'm doing. Like, I think, like, that definitely has a special place in my heart for being something that I think our culture is lacking a lot of right now, and being a really, like, surprisingly solid example of a good way to handle that topic.
Yeah. I love that answer. That's a really good answer. My answer was going to be The Wraith, which we have not talked about on the podcast before. Don't ask us.
No. Someday we'll let you know what happened to that kid with the turbo.
Yeah. Adios, I believe. Ghosts of Christmas Present. So we are just now getting back to the podcast.
Yes.
A little bit of a hiatus. A little bit's a long bit.
Yep.
We just... We're putting this episode in the can.
Mm-hmm.
What would you change about the format? Like, today's conversation, if you could do anything, go back in time and, like, maybe edit a fucking episode so that I didn't have to.
Man.
What would you change in the format?
Well, I think I don't know if I'm yet not scarred from my one editing.
I know. It turns out it's way easier than it was that one time that you had to edit.
God, yeah. Which like we learned a lot.
We have made different choices. If it was that hard every time, we wouldn't be doing it. I'll tell you that. I'll be very explicit.
Yeah, that was a sometimes you learn about mic placement and inputs and you make better and different
sometimes
decisions.
You even have mic stands.
That's true. I mean, not today.
So today,
yeah.
Would a mic stand be a part of the?
Absolutely. Which good news. That's a solved problem.
Great.
In the
future. I can't wait to get
it. Not right now, but in the future. So yeah, I think probably that. And maybe I think I appreciate that we focused largely on the Muppet Christmas Carol. I think it would have been interesting to have another thing in conversation with this more explicitly.
I was going to make us watch either Scrooged or the Schwarzenegger movie. We both know the name of it, and we'll just move on. The ghost
Jingle
of,
All the Way.
Jingle All the Way.
Yeah.
Of course. We knew that.
Yeah.
You didn't even have to say it out loud.
Nope.
And The Ghost of Podcast Future.
Mm-hmm.
What movies do you want to hear us talk about next?
Well, we did watch Alien, and I do really want us to... I would love for us to be able to have a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. Also, I know that like we missed the window where this was particularly relevant, but I think there might be another window that... I know there will be another window when this crops up and can be relevant. But I love Spider-Verse, and I would really love to get to talk about the things that is doing.
I'll tell you this. I have not rewatched that first movie.
But you haven't rewatched it for very particular reasons that I think are understandable.
Well, I have to find it in fucking Dolby Vision.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which the only way to do, which we've streamed other, like I fucking have the Vudu or whatever the fuck, whatever the nice streaming service is that we rent things from.
Mm-hmm.
We did that with Alien so that we could get it in Dolby Vision and surround sound and HDR instead of me just using the internet to my advantage. I think out of the stuff that I want to really talk about eventually for the future, we're still really smart. I think so.
Uh-huh.
Despite best efforts. And I still want to put together something around Mandy. There's something for working class horror. And maybe it's like Mandy and like Evil Dead 2 or something that I think there's something about, like, especially because I don't like scary things. But I fucking love Mandy.
Crap, you've reminded me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You want to do Get Out. You want to do the whole.
Yeah. We have to do some Jordan Peele. And I'm not going to make you do Us. Yeah. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
I think that is a bridge too far.
And it's not just because you're black. It's because I'm a coward.
Us is the scary one. Yeah, Us is the scary one. But Get Out, that. And I don't think it actually necessarily makes sense to do Get Out and Nope at the same time. But I do think that Nope is a fascinating and brilliant movie. And I think there's a lot to talk about there, too. So
excellent.
We should get to some Peele.
Wonderful. Last bonus round question.
Yes.
How many life-changing moments have you had in your pajamas?
Oh, man. Justice, that's actually...
Can I answer first?
Yes, please.
All of 2020.
Oh, well played. Yeah, well played.
That's kind of... I was like, hey, who has a life-defining, like spectrum changing moment of their life in their pajamas? Oh, we all did.
Yeah.
For an entire year and a half of our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. We lived out of our pajamas because it's so fun to just watch Ebenezer in his PJs go like, oh, I'm emotionally vulnerable, but also he's in his long johns.
Like, yeah. But like in this version, like he's got like a really nice,
it's like, a nice robe. Yeah, nice like he robe. Puts on a robe. But yeah, like
it's his best.
So life altering, in your PJs, anything come to mind?
I mean, definitely also that. I would say yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got it. Great.
More than one.
At least.
Yeah.
Wasn't even sexy. I haven't even had that before. And when you, yeah.
Is it pleading the fifth? Is that the...
I think that's what they say.
Okay.
So... we'll be back at some point in time. I don't want to overcommit us to a schedule, but
it is the holiday season, so things are going to be weird.
But we're going to try to catch back up and do a second season of Cultural Fugazi. Mm-hmm. So if you want to email us, you can. I said it earlier at us@fugazipod.com. I'm still paying money for that email address and domain.
Great.
And email service.
Great.
And where to find us on the internet. So those are still out there, or just like send us a text. I don't know. You probably know us.
Yeah.
Find us on Instagram.
Stop us at the bar and be like, hey, talk about this.
I think Chris has a Blue Sky now.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
You can find him on Blue Sky if you know how to get a hold of him.
Yeah.
But you don't, because it's a riddle. But
that's how I like my social media. Like, you can talk to me if you can find
the illusion of privacy.
If you answer these riddles three, then on social media, you can talk to me.
No. We can't. This is already too long. All right. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.